Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, August 31st, 2017. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening at 9 a.m. for the County Administrative Workshop. We have a full board present here today. First item on the agenda is the Sheriff's Office under Department Business. Item 1A is report and recommendation for disposal of property pursuant to ORS. Ordinance, not ORS, but I'm sure there's an ORS referencing this as well.
No, really there's not.
There's got to be an ORS referenced at some point that gives us the authority to do this.
Oh, 98, yeah.
Yeah. It's ordinance, though, number 2014-003. And we have Ms. Lee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Here we are again.
Here we are again. Yeah. Just keep cleaning house.
Go ahead.
Oh, so this is the normal request to dispose of evidence that we haven't been able to either locate the owners for, they can't have it back, or whatever the case may be. It's a fairly small list today because we have the trailers are needed by search and rescue, so we wanted to get those approved so we can get them over to search and rescue.
Trailers are needed by search and rescue.
Yeah.
What's that have to do with anything? So you're saying search and rescue wants to obtain trailers that you have confiscated?
Correct.
Okay.
And patrol also needs one of the trailers because they keep finding big piles of stolen property.
And so they're recovered stolen trailers that you, or for whatever reason, something like that, have not been able to locate the owners in any way.
That's correct. There's no hidden VIN on them. We've done had OSP do VIN inspections on them, and there's no way to identify them.
That's too bad.
It is.
Because if they can be usable, that means they're valuable, and that means that somebody's out something.
Exactly. Well, and that's true of all of the property. I mean, our first goal is to get the property back to the owners. That's the very first goal we have. We work very hard at that. But
is there a time limit you put on stuff like that? I mean, you look for 90 days, or you look for a year, or
you know, it depends on the property. One of the trailers came in 6 or 8 months ago, and I have them really kind of towards the front in the yard there so that they can be seen by the public driving by because mm-hmm. I want someone to
identify.
Are you
talking utility trailers?
Yeah.
Flatbed trailers?
Flatbed, utility.
So those didn't belong to us, or they do and they're just encumbered with stuff?
They were found property.
I'm not sure if I'm tracking. Where did the trailers come from?
At various locations in the county.
But I didn't see trailers on this list of. Did I miss that? I mean, I just see a lot of guns and weapons and knives and.
There's no.
Some currency and.
May I see that list, sir?
I have one.
I didn't bring one with me.
It's in our file. I don't know that I see a trailer at all.
Really?
I could be wrong. There's a little bit of a list of stuff there, but.
Vehicle, boat, yeah.
I'm sure there probably is on there.
I don't have any today, so.
Vehicle.
Yeah, it's there. It's in a weird order today.
Yeah.
The vehicle? Oh, trailer.
Yeah.
Trailer.
ATV.
So just because we look at, don't those have to go to auction? We can't just absorb them.
We can convert them according to the ordinance for county use.
So does DMV, do these have like VIN numbers? You can go to DMV, or do you research that, go to DMV, and then go?
We call OSP, they have an VIN inspector, and he crawls under the trailer and tries to find one.
Okay.
Which he was not able to locate.
Okay. Right. So he fills out an affidavit that no number was found.
Yeah, and we can request a VIN to be assigned to it by DMV.
I have a real challenge with the idea that search and rescue is in need of some trailers. We've confiscated some in some sort of a respect, either found them or what have you, and that's our solution is to just, you know what I mean? If search and rescue needs some trailers, let's buy some trailers. Let's not try to repurpose stuff that isn't ours. I don't know. There's got to be a very distinct, significant separation between what the sheriff finds himself confiscating in any respect, either abandoned or in, as part of a crime, and the legitimacy of our ability to try to find the owner relative to it going back to a program in the sheriff's office. That's why the revenues, in my opinion, can never be just directly deposited back into the sheriff's department. There has to be this significant degree of separation so that the public has faith that there's no possible connection between you're taking, wait a second, that's not part of the crime. You're taking all of this stuff, you know, and then it, you know, not for, this is, it's just got to be incredibly above board and transparent. And it isn't worth, you know, a couple of trailers to me to have that connection be so tight. So I have a challenge with this. This is not my first time. This is always my policy, that this has got to be extremely separate. Because I've heard on a number of occasions people who have questions about how hard did you try to get this back to. And I think you guys do try. I've seen
absolutely
some of these processes. But that's just me. That's not them. And when we do this, it's got to be... I don't know that I can endorse it, but...
Well,
I'm just one.
In any event, I just want to dispose of it, whether it's by sale or even if we don't convert them.
Right.
I still want to get rid of them.
Right. I'm okay with that.
Go ahead.
I'm
curious, you know, one of the things that's kind of unique to our community is a really active scanner chat page and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Illinois Valley has a Facebook page and stuff. Is there any effort to get on those pages and post pictures to see if the owner...
I've not done that.
I would recommend before we dispose of them doing that, because oftentimes you'll see posts on there about, hey, has anyone seen this? And people track things down, and it would give an opportunity at least to see if anybody...
Not that that's not a great idea, but how does she say... You got three people that come forward and say, well, that's my trailer.
Well, they
would have a receipt showing they purchased one.
Yeah, they have to have some
something.
Proof of a, some
yeah.
sort of proof.
Because otherwise,
if
they
you
just
want a receipt. I'll give you a receipt for a purchase trailer. I'll go to DMV and get a bill of sale in the next 10 minutes.
Really?
You have to show.
Her job is not easy. I don't
no,
ever.
No, it's not easy. We're not making this
it
any
is.
Easier for
you. And that's a good suggestion. I mean, I think I've got. I really want this stuff to go back to these people, but how
absolutely.
How do you?
But you have. I think, Karen, you have to understand that at some point in time. We don't know if, you know, the trailer you have in your lot down there, it's seized under some, you know, under a deal, you know, suspicion of being stolen. Mm-hmm. And the guy that stole it, he's not going to pipe up and say, hey, that's my trailer. And the and you don't
no,
know what it was
they
for.
They do, actually.
They actually
really?
They
come
do.
In and say, hey.
Yeah.
That's my trailer?
And
I want it back?
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Never mind, I forgot. I'm sorry. I just got to stop.
You're in Josephine County.
Well, maybe it's a rewind button on that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do that a lot with guns, too.
Mr. Brandis may have.
Yeah. Just one little bit of endpoint. Not exactly the same, but similar. You know, we run auctions to get rid of our stuff at times. And a couple times we tried doing it ourselves, and you very quickly run into spending $1,000 to get rid of a $200 piece of equipment. So I would just throw that caveat out there as well. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but it can very quickly devolve into, well, that's a little dinged over there. That doesn't look quite right. Pretty soon carries
it has a flat tire.
We're not talking about the disposition. That's already set and determined. You've got that.
Just a matter of trying to find the owner that can very quickly.
Right.
If I can ask a question on, you say search and rescue needs these trailers. They need them on a temporary basis because of the fires we have going right now, or do they want them on a permanent basis?
Permanent.
They haul big equipment to get to rescue sites.
Yeah, I know they haul them. ATVs and all that.
And they're a complete 100% volunteer organization. They raise their own money. They're a nonprofit. They don't get money from the general fund or the taxes base or in any way. And so
well, a lot of their
and actually this is going back into the I'm sorry, Commissioner.
A lot of their infrastructure was acquired with 2008 and prior Title III funds. The boat building out there is part of the Marine Deputy, but Search and Rescue's got all of those resources out there. Most of those were acquired with grant funds, Title III grant funds, but they're quickly, you know, getting old and needing to be replaced. And I know they've got trailers mm-hmm. and stuff. to carry most things, the Snowcat and the quads and even
see
horses.
What you're
two horse
saying,
trailers.
Though, because that, as you know, as we are underneath that magnifying glass all the time. If anybody out there makes a connection and gets on Lily's chat page over there, you know, the
not mine.
Internet's chat page, then all of a sudden, you know, this thing could get blown out of proportion. I do see.
It's just easily construed.
I don't know how to.
You go shopping for, well, I want that. You know, I'm not saying, I'm sure we didn't do that.
No.
Because it's been sitting out there for probably a long time, but it's easily, too easily construed in my mind. And we could figure out a way to get search and rescue a couple of trailers if they need them for.
But
so I'm okay with everything needs to just go to auction. I don't like designations. I can't do that.
Okay. Of course they'll question it if you said this is what we did to try to find the owner of that trailer and it didn't work. So therefore it becomes the county property.
I think she keeps a list of all those attempts and letters.
Yeah. Well, I don't have anyone to send a letter to.
Right, that's true.
Without a VIN, there's no way to even start. That's why I think that sometimes the Facebook option. But
this trailer belongs in no man's land, and there's no real reason why it couldn't go to good public use and search and rescue.
Okay.
Yeah, that is a benefit to the community.
It is. And if you did get somebody, oh, yeah, well, that was my trailer. Say, where have you been?
Absolutely.
What rock have you lived under? But however, and you know, I guess if he could honest to goodness prove it, we still have it, and he could actually
where's
prove
the police
that
report
is,
where he reported it
then
stolen?
He could get it back. We're just using it until somebody comes forward.
Yeah, I had a trailer that was exactly those circumstances. I was like getting ready to sell it, and right before that happened, the owner just happened to see it in the yard that had been sitting there for over a year, mm-hmm. and it came in. And it was like. Where you been?
Yeah, that may be the caveat that we're keeping it in county inventory in case the thing ever pops up. That, yeah, where's my trailer? Oh, we've got it. I think we have your trailer. Thought it's search and rescue. Mm-hmm. And we've been using it because nobody came forward.
Absolutely.
We're not really transferring. I guess we are transferring ownership to the county.
Yeah, I think once we give it to search and rescue, it's search and rescues.
No, I think that once if an owner truly
if
comes
owner
forward, we'll
come
transfer
forward,
it back to them.
Search and rescue needs to understand they may lose that trailer. It's on loan to search and rescue type thing.
So that's a good example of something that would be very clean is that you dispose of all these things. We allocate the revenue to go purchasing a couple of trailers with VIN numbers, sale bills of sales, and you know, all checked out, good quality stuff. That I mean, to a degree. I kind of like that method. It's transparent. It's going to auction. That's what I would be in favor of, just a consistent process for divesting ourselves of evidence.
What happens if we sell that trailer and then a guy comes forward and says, hey, that was my trailer. You just stole a merchandise.
That gets a little complicated.
I'd be more worried about someone driving down the street saying, I just saw my trailer go by behind that person, the cops pull them over because they have an owner saying that's reported.
Stolen merchandise.
And versus search and rescue, where
someone
sees it, it's not going to be a
so
big.
We've been sending stuff to auction for
long time,
a decade.
But we've also done the other in my career because I'm the one who collected evidence, and we would transfer it over. And I know
I'm
when
not
we've
sure
repurposed
I've ever
stuff.
Transferred it since I don't. Pretty consistent. I don't think I've done that since I've been here, but probably prior.
Okay.
I just
remembered that happened.
They have. Yeah.
I
specifically was in bolt cutters that were needed.
So right now you just is it just one trailer or two trailers that are
I believe out? There's three.
There's three trailers.
I believe there's three.
Yeah, there's at least two listed here on trailers.
There's one, two, three.
Because there seems to be a need right now, and we've got a lot of fires going on and a lot of stuff search and rescue can be involved in, I have no problem with putting them out there and they could use them as they see fit. But I would like Wally to weigh in on. I'd like.
Well, legally, we have the authority to do it. So, I mean, you can ask Wally, but
yeah, but we have the authority.
She's
to
asking something that's totally legal.
Totally legal.
Yep. What exactly are you looking to, because we're looking to dispose of all of this, but mm-hmm. you're not, I don't have a list specifically that says, I don't think, this is going to auction or it's going to repurpose within the county. Do you have that?
No. Well, the ordinance gives, once it's approved by the Board of Commissioners, I dispose of it in the best method for the county overall.
Okay.
And to me,
sometimes that's destroying,
sometimes it's destroying, yeah.
Okay.
Some of the guns I'll cut up because they're assault rifles.
So what's the will of the board? Let's just move forward on something.
I would say continue on as you request, so go ahead and transfer those three trailers over. With the caveat that if somebody sees one driving down the street
Absolutely.
Behind a search and rescue vehicle and they bring it forward, then it's an investigation and, you know, to make sure that trailer gets returned back to its rightful owner.
Transferring ownership isn't a problem.
Yeah, when somebody says, well, you just took my trailer. I said, no, we didn't. We're using it because we've stored it, so we're going to use it.
Yeah.
But you know what? We're not, you know, you proved that it's yours. By golly, we'll just unhook her right here on the road and...
Absolutely.
Ride our four-wheelers away and...
Probably not quite that quickly, but...
No.
Commissioner Morgan, do you have an opinion on this?
In this situation, I would support search and rescue receiving the items. But, I mean, generally speaking, we approve of disposal, and you see fit how to dispose. I know that it doesn't ever go to... It can't ever go to any person. It can only go to... What are the specifics of you? Either auction or what are your options?
Nonprofit organization.
When's the last time you turned things over to a nonprofit organization?
Probably 6 months ago. I gave them several totes of clothes that are quite usable. I believe I've given some baseball bats to the Boys and Girls Club. Pretty sure I did.
All right, so I would support that as well.
Okay, we'll move it forward. It'll be on the administrative calendar next week. Thank you.
And would you like me to attend?
It's up to your liaison.
I think we can explain that. Okay. You know, just write up a little quick thing for me, and then I'll read it for you so you don't have to come in. Unless you'd like to attend.
It does.
Let's do that. In case there's any questions.
Have you come in, so in case there's questions.
Yeah, in case there's questions.
You can answer.
I would be happy to come in.
Well, my colleague
needs to. It's a pretty complicated thing over there in evidence.
Yes.
I think you're...
Okay.
What I think I hear Commissioner DeYoung saying is...
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Item number 1B is Public Works Local Agency Agreement number 32280, Locally Delivered State-Funded Project Program, Sand Creek Road. You are not Mr. DeJonge.
Real quick, which one is the one we're supposed to be looking at? The one that's solo in the packet or the one that's in the packet?
The one that's in the packet.
Okay, so not the one that was separately put in there.
They're inextricably intertwined or something like that.
Okay.
Good morning. So we have, two things in front of us. The first one is
for the record.
The agreement exchange with the state. And this is going back to this is Sand Creek Bridge, which was damaged once the Grants Pass Irrigation District box failed. The channel dropped about 12 feet, chased upstream until it got to the bridge, and it basically eroded out under the bridge, and now we have abutments that are hanging in midair. So the new bridge will be about 80 feet as opposed to the current one that is 30, so it is a bigger bridge by a long shot. The good news is that Chuck was aggressive with the state in pushing to get this onto the emergency list, so it still comes through the state bridge program, as all of our other bridges do. So we have the potential to having our usual 10.27% match. However, we're pretty confident that it's going to come in below the state's projected cost, and we may well end up with no out-of-pocket. I would say that's at least a 50-50 chance. I think the odds of us having to do the usual 10.27 match are very, very small. It's going to be close, but there's $1.56 million of state money available. So once you add in our exchange amount, it gets up to like 1.65. This next contract we're going to look at here with DEA to do the engineering is about $410,000. We kind of look at 25% cost of engineering on a bridge as kind of worst case. It's not usually even that much. That would put the project cost at about $1.64 million. So if the state at 1.55, you're talking $90,000 match maybe, but I think it's really going to be on the better side of that. So we may actually get out of this thing unscathed, for lack of a better term. I would like to push for the board at least signing the exchange with ODOT this morning to keep this thing moving. We think we're going to be tight next year getting this done before school opens, and that would be a nice hurdle to not have to deal with. It's going to be close. Seems hard to believe a year out, but by the time you do design, environmental check, the construction process, everything else, I think it's going to be about a year from today that we'd be getting it open.
Does any of this address the upstream from that? Because there's an awful lot of damage above our bridge.
There is some, and we've seen it chasing a bit. We actually the other day noticed there's a pocket of trees dying in a strange spot, and I suspect it is because they've lost some of that material around them. So if you really dig into the weeds in this, you'll see where they talk about slopes 5, and the state has there were slopes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and they, as they've gone on in time, these deal with the setbacks from the riverbed where they come up with, the ordinary high water mark, a potentially worst-case high water mark, then they set the bridge further outside that channel to decide, here's a reasonable buffer for this thing scouring down. So the older bridge, that's why it failed. It was built when there was no standard like that. If the channel was 12 feet wide, you put the abutments at 13, when it blows out, you got problems. So that's why it ends up being 80 feet wide instead of 30, just because it's set so far out, future scour. But yeah, really it's chased all the way down to the level of that headwall.
We don't have any obligation to 100 feet upstream and downstream to redo the stream bank and repairing areas or anything?
We do not. Okay. We do not. That is outside the right-of-way, so the county would not have a piece of that.
Just to be fair, so there's a total different prescription of how we maintain bridges now as opposed to the way we used to.
Right.
We used to be able to do in-stream water work to maintain the channel, and perhaps even I'm looking at the Upper Sucker Creek Bridge where the distance between the water and the riverbed is closing up, even though that bridge is a third longer probably than the bridge that was there before. Mm-hmm. And it's completely asinine, and I've worked with some legislators on working out something that says you can do some in-stream water work 100 feet above or below or something like that to maintain the channel. The Applegate Bridge, when you talk about how much these bridges cost, it's like it's tremendous every 10 feet. And we're going from whatever to
it's 30 crazy. To 80.
And that's,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a balance in terms of what the future maintenance is. Do you end up putting more money towards building it bigger and overkill to begin with? Or is it a bit narrow and you didn't put a bit more scour, so you got to go drop larger boulders in there every 5 or 10 years? It's a balancing act, and I won't pretend to be a hydrologist to give you a good answer on that. So that's the exchange agreement.
So the exchange agreement is not controversial. We've done these forever, and our rate is pretty – it's a good bang for the buck for the citizens of Josephine County, especially those finite dollars that we have in public works. But is it really a whole bang for the buck for a week, or it would be – 6 days, 7 days?
Every day counts is the only thing. Yeah, that's kind of where we're getting at. If the board's not comfortable signing today, we could certainly do it at business session. Hopefully we can suck up 6 days in the process.
I'm just curious, if it was a difference of we need this done by today, how come it wasn't here sooner? I mean, the bridge washed out in January.
It's been stuck in the state and other places.
Okay.
We moved it quickly. But if you want to wait till Wednesday, that's fine. I can certainly come up.
Yeah, I think we could wait till Wednesday. Okay. A year project.
Okay. That'd be cleaner.
There will be other things that we could probably expedite, but I think the initial probably
hopefully
just be yeah right.
Oh, yeah, well,
I'll come back here next September 8th and say, you know what, bridges on.
Guess what, boys? Yeah. Well, hey, boys and girls, remember me?
Yeah, yeah.
I told you so.
We should be. I mean, DEA does good work. They'll get design out quick. They understand the necessity and the importance of getting it open. So hopefully we can.
Are we jeopardizing? Are we putting in jeopardy our match or anything of that sort?
You said No.
So 6 days isn't going
to. Doesn't change the finances of it. No. We've been kind of holding our breath for the last 4 to 6 weeks to hope we have this thing in hand. And so we lost 4 to 6 weeks next summer. But we'll do there. We'll do the best we can.
Wait, why? How does 1 week loses 4 to 6 weeks next summer?
No, we've been waiting on this for 4 to 6 weeks at least. It's been a slow, I'm probably undershooting, it's been a slow go upstate.
And his target has been opening up school next year.
Right. So. Yeah. I would have loved to have this in front of you 2 months ago, but due to forces outside this room and my office, it's been sitting.
Anything else?
That's it for that one.
You are on my schedule for 11 o'clock today about the road standards. I reviewed them. I probably didn't write you a note. They're fine.
Okay.
There isn't anything really in there to discuss. I did have an issue that's been kind of weighing on my mind for a couple of years now, when they replaced the Illinois Valley Bridge, when they replaced the Applegate Bridge, there's something different about them. The guardrail on either side, they're higher. Mm-hmm. I think the standard went up, but they're solid. If you look around at other jurisdictions, I'm thinking of the one in Gold Hill, the other bridge.
7th Street.
They've all got these. You can see through them to see the water. It's a real challenge for me. I don't know where we would have weighed in on this, but if you look around other jurisdictions, and I have struggled to find another one that has these solid solid guardrails to where you can't see the river from your car going over, it just is a one little element of tourism to be able to, like, see the water.
205 over the Columbia.
I'd
love to see the river and the boats, but I can't.
Yeah.
On 205.
It's not okay.
You need a bigger car.
Right.
I can see them from my Prius. Just kidding.
Anyway, something to consider when we're having these I don't know that there's anything we can do now. They're built. But if there's ever a need to do repairs, maintenance, whatever, I just think that we should have a prescription for bridges.
Maybe there should be, when they're designing the bridge, a scenic aspect to it. You know, that maybe there's a box. Did you look at the scenic aspect of the bridge? Some of them can have a solid, but I'm sure a poured solid deal is cheaper than galvanized stuff that's down on 7th Street Bridge. It's probably relatively expensive. So, you know, maybe there's a box that needs to be. Is there a scenic aspect to this bridge?
I will talk to DEA and see if they can give us at least just a menu of what's the difference on this bridge. 80 feet is kind of a good shoot the middle length we do, and you can see a cost of.
I hadn't even thought about this bridge. I was thinking more of like the 30,000 cars a day that are going over, you know, whatever. It's like, how are these people not getting exposed to the fact that there's a river down there? You should hang out in Josephine County. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. No, well, they can give us a number. We at least come up with a linear cost that it adds per foot. So, we can ask. Yeah.
I feel like we probably weren't asked. If we were, it just kind of happened. And when I go to other jurisdictions, you can see the river from their bridges. I just thought that was an interesting thought. There's this letter. I like a thought on that. I know there's nuances to everything, but somebody submitted that, I think, to the full board. It came in, and it has to do with replacing a culvert or something, or getting a permit, and the challenge of meeting the paving, probably, or in stream. Bringing it to your attention.
I'll take a look. I mean, and it's not our culvert, then, if they're saying theirs. It's the county's
theirs,
culvert. We'll go do it.
I think they're looking for an okay from maybe your office.
We wouldn't weigh in on a culvert getting replaced. That's going to be purely planning or ODFW. And if it's a county-owned culvert, we can replace it. I can make a call or two to see what's happening. But, yeah. Okay.
Maybe it is planning, huh?
Is it Knopke Creek?
Holton Creek Road?
No.
Get a copy?
Yeah. Okay. We'll get it worked out between your guys' office, maybe?
Well, I know there's a feud going on with... There's one that washed out, and some neighbors want a bridge and some want a culvert. And so they're all competing to get the applications in.
Mm.
And ODFW has weighed in on it, what they prefer.
A bridge, but obviously.
They want the bridge. And there's some people that want the culvert, but the guy who wants the bridge got the application in first. I'm guessing that's the project.
We'll get you a copy of that, too.
I think that's it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
And then you want to come back up for the DEA one? I don't know where that is on the agenda. That was the
I don't have it listed, so go ahead and just go through it.
Did you see it in the packet?
Yeah.
It's separately in there.
It was confusing, this packet today. So
it.
Go ahead.
Do it now? Okay, so this would be the contract for the engineering services on Sand Creek with David Evans and Associates. We've worked with them quite a few times in the past. They're one of the 8 pre-qualified outfits with the state. The contract was $409. As I said, that's, we're guessing, 25 to 30% of the cost of the bridge, which is fairly standard. We can get into the scope of work and all that if you'd like to, but this is your standard engineering design, environmental permitting, slopes that we just talked about, project management, all those usual sorts of things.
They take care of core engineers and everything all through this 400 and something.
We do not permit it, thankfully. Yes, they go fight those battles, which is why, yes, we're going to be looking at next school year till this thing gets done, as much as anything. So That one I'd like to get on for business session next Wednesday.
Sounds good.
Okay.
We'll move this forward. Without objection? Okay, great. Thanks. Yeah. Item number 1C, thanks, Rob,
yep.
Is Human Resources, new commercial plans examiner position. You want to come up? Ms. Schmelzer and JJ, develop in the community development under building and safety. And then item number C2 is reclass senior code enforcement administrator position in community development. JJ, Ms. Schmelzer.
All right, so these two positions originally came to the board 3 or 4 months ago as part of the budgetary process, went through the liaison, was approved in the budget, and then I brought them in maybe a month ago, not quite that long ago, just for final approval of the job description, but the board had some questions primarily.
I had forgotten. The
liaison had some questions about it. Those questions have been addressed. So now is our chance to bring it forward again and address any other issues you have.
So my issue with the senior code enforcement one, we're creating a job description. I know that we're doing a reclassification of a current job. But if this person leaves and we have somebody else come in, this job description won't be applicable. And the line says, in addition to at least 5 years of actual experience as Josephine County Ordinance Administrator, wouldn't be ready to say must have a minimum of 5 years experience as an ordinance administrator before being qualified or something like
that? So assuming that we didn't have a candidate with this level of experience, I imagine we would do similar to what we've done with our the rest of the folks in planning division. So a good example is we lost a planner 3. We had some applicants. They had a terrific applicant but didn't quite have the skills to be a planner 3, but had great skills to be a planner 2. So they hired her as a planner 2, and as she builds her skill set and once she becomes knowledgeable enough about Josephine County Code, they'll move them to planner 3. So same would be the case with this. They wouldn't hire a senior position because they don't have the skills yet. They'd bring them in as a regular codes administrator until they built up their skill set enough to do those more complex cases.
Okay. The way the position, we used to have the senior position in there. There were actually, I think, 3 maybe job descriptions in that field. But lately we've been hiring them all on as entry level. Because they were entry level, they didn't have the experience. This person has a year under Josephine County, but many years with enforcement in other areas, and has demonstrated she's working far beyond an entry level person at this point. We also do have a volunteer on staff that she oversees, and ideally, as you know, I'll be coming back in someday asking for code enforcement help because we need it. It's an area we need. Building Safety has stepped forward and said that they would be willing to fund a significant portion of that person just to help get the code enforcement going. So it will actually dovetail nicely. This position will actually be able to oversee an entry-level person coming in as well.
So then I'm really going to push you to change that language of that line then, because it says at least 5 years actual experience as the Josephine County Ordinance Administrator. If she's worked here 1 year, she shouldn't have 5 years as the Josephine County Administrator. So you need to take Josephine County out of there if you're wanting this for a specific person, because the language doesn't match with someone who's worked here for 1 year. Essentially, it's saying anyone who's going to qualify as a senior ordinance administrator must work in Josephine County for 5 years by the language of this under essential duties. It's the second paragraph before the numbering.
Or an equivalent combination of education and experience.
That does not say that in my copy. I'm looking right here.
They may have given you the old.
And this says this person is 5 years as the Josephine County person. So considering you're trying to go for a Josephine County person who's had 1 year, this description doesn't fit.
I see. So JJ's looking further down in the job description.
I'm just saying I got to one line and it doesn't match up. So
there's just a conflict there in the description.
It's being nitpicky. I'm sorry. I hate nitpicky, but at the same time, it caught my attention because I'm like, who's worked there for 5 years in code enforcement? And if there was someone I didn't know about, and so that's why I asked, should it just be that at least 5 years experience as a code enforcer? And the response was, this person, it's 1 year, so she won't even be qualified for the job you're trying to create for her.
She would be under the other part of the job description. There's just a conflict in the description that needs to be corrected.
Well, it's clear. I mean, I'm fine with changing that if you want it. To me, it's not a big deal. It's a clarification in the education. You know, we're looking for someone with 5 years experience as in this role. But in the education experience that specifies what that means, it also says kind of the standard lines is or equivalent education experience. If you want it to be clarified up above, that's not an issue. I can do that.
Am I clear to understand? So we've got three different job descriptions within the code enforcement. Because I think I like that better as a prescription as opposed to changing the description to match what the person, you know, it's like when you reach this point, we already had it predetermined. It's not subject to the person in the role. This is what it takes to get to that planner two, planner three position as an equivalent. It's already kind of pre-subscribed after 2 years.
So you have a 1, 2, and 3, and you...
Because I'm cool with hiring at these lower levels. It makes sense. I mean, people really... And even if they do have some experience, you kind of need to test them out a little bit before they're... Is their philosophy the same? Because it's different here, perhaps, than other code enforcement agencies. And then they do the one for a while. But we've already got, after 2 years or the equivalent, blah, 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 you go to this one, and it's pretty set. It's been reviewed. It looks good. And then you go to the third one. I kind of feel more comfortable about it. I know we aspire in the HR world to not reflect exactly each individual person, but it's kind of a pre-subscription to what the role is as defined by the county.
Well, and with these positions, and I would say the planners are the same thing, it's not like I get certification X, which qualifies me as a planner three. It's more I have a greater in-depth knowledge about more complex cases.
In combination, potentially, with education.
Yeah. We're like in the sheriff's department, when you get your advanced certification, you qualify as an advanced deputy and it's based on, you have to be a deputy X number of years and have X number of certifications, and now you can be an advanced. In a lot of cities, their wastewater workers have certifications. They take classes through the state, and they get their certification. Now they can be a wastewater worker 3 or 2 or 1 or whatever. We're planning and code enforcement, it's more, road workers are similar. It's, what is your skill set, but it's not a certification based.
And this one, too, it would be nice to have a 1, 2, 3 at the current time, but keep in mind this job description, the reason why it's here is it had been buried, it had been put away, it had been retired. So that's why this is back here, is to start that hierarchy of an entry level and then a more advanced person. Because right now that was retired.
Also with we could do 3 if you wanted, but with a, currently there's only 1 person in the position. Our intention down the road is to have 2.
Using that as an example, if it's not... Are you comfortable, Commissioner Morgan, after we change out the county language?
I do think that I hadn't really read all the recommendations to the Planning Commission until I was gone on this trip. I wasn't here for the meeting where they were submitted, and so I was spending the time, and it made me realize you're almost going to need a full team of enforcement to... if everything in that thing goes through to enforce it. You would need not just 2 people. You're going to need half a dozen people to be enforcing code enforcement in this county, which at some level, yes, you would need to have an idea of seniority, I guess, or chain of command and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know that we're there now that our first position, our only position we hire is a senior. If changing a position... Is what she doing not fall into the current job description she's doing? Is the current job description actually say it's an entry level position, thus why we need to change it to a senior one? Or is it simply because we're anticipating that we're going to be hiring more staff and we want her to be in charge?
When you look at the description, the current description right now, she's exceeding the requirements of that job description. She's doing more than that position requires. So she's kind of falling outside of the job description.
And there's no place for her to fall?
There's no place for her to fall because there's no other job description. This is...
But just getting a more education, more experience doesn't necessarily get you a new job description.
I agree. As a
PO, I went for a master's degree. That doesn't necessarily mean that I just get a new job description. Now, it did qualify me to apply for another job description, but one wasn't created for me.
We don't have a job description for her to apply for. That's
true.
What we're saying.
Well,
if
we only had the job description for Planner 1, but you had someone who understands complex aggregate cases, and they can do those, they have the skill set to be a Planner 3.
Why are they doing that?
Well, yeah, that's my point. So
she's doing stuff outside her classification, thus merits a reclassification of her job description, which we're doing right now.
That's
not
language.
Debatable.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what we need to do. She's a union employee. I don't want her to file a grievance to say she's working out of class, so let's just address it in that respect. I think Commissioner Morgan brings up some good points about where code enforcement might go in the future, but I don't think making this senior position takes away or adds or what have you. It doesn't predispose us to a certain plan. I think it's just an appropriate reaction because, in my opinion, there's likely to only be one person for a while in that position until we have a revenue stream to pay for additional people. That's
right.
The constraint always. And I don't want to disagree, but I'd say that it has to do what we're looking to implement all runs through a land use compatibility statement, an OLCC. And yes, there could be an element of additional enforcement. But there's also that one-stop thing of you just don't get your lux if you're on an RR operating commercial. And that's what I see as the measure at the planning office to say, I don't know if we're going to enforce it because there's a lot of black market out there.
Well, the portion I was bringing up is annual inspections.
Mm-hmm.
That requires people
Somebody.
To inspect. We
right.
don't have those people to do that
that's
inspection.
True.
So the commercial plans examiner, what's that one about?
Okay, that one, too, was in the budget and approved. What we have, so a commercial plans examiner reviews, of course, the commercial plans. Our big plans, like if it's for a store or a hospital, well, that's a bad example in the unincorporated areas, but it could be because we do the inspections for Cape Junction. Those larger projects, we farm out to a third party. And they do the reviews on those, and they take the liability on those larger projects. The problem we're having is, under state law, marijuana is classified as commercial. So it needs a commercial plans examiner.
For like a greenhouse or anything?
Yes, a fence, greenhouse. That's all commercial. You're not going to farm all of that out to this consultant. First of all, he's not going to have the ability to do all of that. So what we have right now, our multi-cert guy is reviewing everything, and he's working out of class. He's doing all the commercial things on that. The other thing is when you reclass that or when you have that job description, then that position opens up. And again, that was budgeted to refill the vacancy that's left by moving an employee in there. It helps with our overall workload. I had went through the numbers and I looked at all the overtime and the comp time that's accumulating and what it's costing us. And I look at, you know, as a supervisor, I have to look at people's lives. These are, at the current time, we have young people with young children. They're never home. You know, they're working 6 in the morning till 7 at night or taking stuff home on the weekends. That's not what the job calls for. They're not at my level where it's expected that I put that in. These people are supposed to be doing their 8 hours and going home. I'm not in favor of burning out employees because there's so much work they can't keep up that they have to put in overtime and then destroy their family and their relationships. They work they should be working 8 hour days, but they can't because they can't get the work done. We want to have the commercial plans examiner working solely on those marijuana ones and other commercial activities, so then we can bring in another replacement to help address the workload that we have. I've shared with you the numbers. In 2 years, our revenue in that department has doubled. We're also doing 6 to 7 more inspections per day. We had one inspector smash into a deer. I mean, they're overworked. They're flat out overworked, and we need to get them back to 8 hours a day, stop paying the overtime, and get them to the point where they can do their job adequately. And I want to remind you, too, that this job is not funded out of the general fund. This one is completely funded out of the building safety fund. They're a self-sufficient department, so it's no effect on the taxpayer with that position either.
Well, I think as building and everything else ramps up around here, we knew it was going to come. We've cut everything back to nothing in all departments. And then as this starts to ramp up, you're going to have to restaff accordingly, in my mind.
We are.
I just want to be cautious because I know in some of the, a lot of times firemen get really, real comfortable with the amount of overtime they're getting. They go out and buy a new boat, or they buy it predicated on the overtime that they're getting, and you cut the overtime out, they get upset.
That's right. That's why they should be working 8 hours a day.
Yeah. So that's just, a lot of times people, even though it takes away from their home life and whatnot, that overtime money is even worth more money than just 8 hours a day.
So one of the things that Ms. Meltzer and I have talked about is I don't like to make adjustments that are temporary in nature because you're hiring people and you need to have some sort of a strategy for a multi-year approach. Given we don't know what the future holds with the cannabis industry, but it's likely to kind of have a maintain this situation. Whether we restrict RR or not, people are gonna need more commercial inspections going forward. Mm-hmm. If you have all of these OHA members who are now having to go into the commercial OLCC regulated thing, can you imagine the kind of inspections that are going to be required of our office of people trying to come in and be compliant? So I think there's a sustainability in this fashion. One of the other important things that we talked about is not giving up that contract with our other provider that does commercial inspections, our former director. That's really important because I think she's got a real great perspective on doing some of those daily kinds of inspections, those larger ones, still having that outsourced. That's where our greatest potential liability is also, nobody's going to really sue us over a fence, that whatever. Right. Those are the things that I think she's wanting to keep in-house, which I totally endorse her formula with going forward and how she wants to structure this through her department. I think I was hesitant that we were going to be substituting for that contractor who needs to provide that up and down, because we're not hiring somebody.
That's
and letting them go.
That's our overflow parking.
Yes.
But I think we've established that new foundation in the commercial inspections, and that makes sense to me. So I endorse this moving forward. And
I'll support that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll support it. And we heard yesterday from one of the public comment people, it's a pretty big numbers that your department's brought in last year.
We are, and it's crazy. All I can say is it's crazy.
Yeah.
It really is. So. But we enjoy what we're doing. We see an impact. We just want to do it to the best of our ability.
Well, please pass along to your staff our thanks for their hard work.
You need a bigger boat.
We do. A yacht would do.
Thank you.
Thank you, JD.
So, finance? Any schedules that we should be aware of? I mean, we're almost done.
I am an 11 o'clock here.
Okay.
If you're not done by then, we're in trouble.
Well, I got plenty of time.
You never
plenty
think
of
so.
Time. I try to be efficient. So a quick follow-up on the evidence, just to I was at that weekly business session, or at a weekly business session several years ago, prior sheriff, prior board, where members of the public got up and complained you were there? Okay. Members of the public got up and complained that the sheriff was confiscating goods so that they could eventually be part of the evidence that eventually got sold and eventually became part of his budget. And at that very meeting is where the board said, no more money going directly to evidence. It goes to general fund. And then the board can decide whether or not to transfer to try to give that degree of separation. So it is a real issue of public perception.
But that's money.
Money.
Or would you, in the event of these trailers?
Well, I think the concept is still there that the sheriff
confiscated
because he wanted
to find out who owned it.
Yeah.
So we need a trailer.
I'm voting no on this. I want a clean. I want everything to go to auction. In my opinion, I want to review this ordinance. The board should be the only one making the determinations about how property is divested, whether it's acquired by the sheriff, it's in the assessor's office, facilities is looking to do it. I just feel like there's got to be that nexus that is so separate from any beneficiary type of agency or program. Right. And we're the only one that I can see to do that.
Or you don't have one department or one individual overseeing the entire scope of the process from beginning to
picking the nonprofit they like, not having one they don't like.
If Search and Rescue put in for two trailers, what budget does it come out of? Sheriff's budget?
Search and Rescue is within the sheriff's budget. The Search and Rescue director, part-time, is in the sheriff's, he's the deputy.
Sure.
And the other part of the time, it's not under emergency management, even if it's housed out at SAR.
So I'm just trying to figure out a process here.
They have a nonprofit partner, Friends of Search and Rescue, that is not necessarily, they're not sheriff's office. They fundraise for Search and Rescue.
Right.
And potentially that would be the direction you can give, is to give it to the fundraising branch that's a nonprofit that raises money for Search and Rescue. So
Friends of Search and Rescue.
That's separate than the sheriff's office.
But the sheriff making that determination against...
It shouldn't be them, you're right.
The Parks Department wanting their foundation, or the fairgrounds having their foundation,
Well, that's what I'm wondering. For the Search and Rescue to get two trailers that they need now, do they come to the board and say, I want money out of the general fund to go buy two trailers? Do they put that requisition in to the sheriff, and the sheriff says, I don't have
money?
They'd have
to go fundraise. They'd have to go fundraise.
Traditionally, we have not supported Search and Rescue with general fund dollars. It's been either the Title III dollars, or it's the money that they are able to generate themselves. So the Search and Rescue historically has been self-funded, if you will, based on either Title III dollars or the... So now, for example, Search and Rescue doesn't get any money from us. It gets money from whatever they can raise, donations and fundraisers. So that's where they're at now.
That's why I think that alternative of the Friends of Search and Rescue would be something that's not the sheriff's office receiving a direct benefit.
I don't like the sheriff making that designation about who gets
separation of duties.
I agree. We need to change the ordinance
how
this does is that everything comes before the board for us to determine.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
Or at least
yes.
the liaison. I mean, I don't need it. But you've got to have some degree of separation.
But at some level, we're also saying, okay, you can't ever obtain, but all these other departments can because we're going to auction and it's going to go to them. So that's putting a different department over their need when they're a fundraising need and the others are supported somewhat. Some are, Parks is not, but somewhat. So I think that they're in the same boat, that if you look at Search and Rescue as a division in and of itself that is different than the sheriff's office, it's volunteer. Other than the one staff person that does that, every person there is a volunteer that volunteers more than any other volunteer organization around here for the most part, as far as the training
requirements. They do a great job.
And then if they have a partner nonprofit to keep it clean, but any other department in the county also could go by the sheriff's office and say, we really have need of that. And it would be just the same as them identifying it for them.
I don't want to debate the merits of these organizations, and I don't think that's what you're doing.
Mm-mm.
Just need to establish a process. And so for me, he gave an update. I'm telling you where I stand. I will vote against it on Wednesday. I'd rather take a little bit of time, step back. If they needed that resource, then we should send everything to auction, and we, the board, can allocate those resources to Search and Rescue to purchase a couple of trailers. That's my opinion. That's clean.
Can Search and Rescue buy it at auction?
They could.
Friends of Search and Rescue go to the auction and buy it?
Yeah, I think they're an agency that can. They're a degree of separation. So, anyway, just something we can work on. If that's the direction of the board, I'm happy to take a look. I'm going to take a look at that ordinance and stuff and figure it out.
And I just wanted to reinforce the statement that the public does have a perception
and
of...
And rightfully so.
You know, one person having complete control over the whole beginning to end.
So do I. I have friends' stuff. It was stolen. They never got it back, but everything was kind of probably confiscated at some point. They knew who it. They got the people. He's going to trial on Wednesday. But where is this stuff? Where is the generator? How hard do they work? I mean, they know these cases where there's stuff coming in. I'm not questioning Deputy Lee at all. I just, it seems overwhelming to get a trailer full of stuff. And where do you start with trying to say whose stuff is what?
Right.
But that's why, with the emphasis on making sure that it's above board and transparent on the disposition of that stuff, it's got to be 110% in my mind.
So going on to another, this morning I talked to a gal from OLCC this regarding the distribution of the state marijuana tax. And so I need to respond to a questionnaire in order to show that Josephine County does allow recreational marijuana businesses within the county. It's just a step towards, and then hopefully we'll get a distribution of some state marijuana tax money next month in September. But working on that. The next thing, just for your information, is I talked with Jill Gleistein of the food bank. As you know, this was over at the benefits fair last week for all the county employees. And as you know, we gave the food bank, or Friends of the Food Bank, a significant contribution from our McKenzie Trust Fund. It was money that had been given to the county to use for the benefit of the citizens of the county who needed assistance and support. Years ago, 25 years ago, back in the day when the county actually ran the welfare program for the county. So anyway, Food Bank has been a recipient of the McKenzie Trust funds over the years. So when we divested ourselves of those funds, we gave a significant chunk, $62,000, to the Food Bank. They built several greenhouses there at the Raptor Creek Farm. And she said that she would love to be able to give a presentation to the board about what they have done at Raptor Creek with the funds that we gave them.
And that trust fund?
It's gone now. We got rid of it. We gave a good chunk to the Boys and Girls Club and to McKenzie. I believe those were the two main ones.
21 to Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah. And part of our continuing effort to move out those funds and close funds so that we don't have to administer them and oversee them. Kind of the same thing like with Hugo Hills and stuff. We're trying to minimize the footprint of the county, yeah. So I would think that would be a great thing at a WBS. I mean, she'd be a 10-minute, 15-minute presentation about what the food bank does. The other thing she was requesting, and we used to do this, is to have payroll deductions for the food bank. I'm in favor of supporting those programs that the county, that used to be part of the county. So food bank, she made that suggestion. She had a list of approximately 29 people who said yes, they would support the food bank through a payroll deduction. I think it would be appropriate to, if we were to open to payroll deduction, I would include not just the food bank, but the library and also the CAMI CASA program, as those three programs all used to be part of county county oversight.
So you're talking about employees that say, I want to get a certain part of my paycheck every month to
just
the food bank.
Just opening up that.
It allows donations out of their pay.
Right.
It used to be United Way used to do it, and United Way Josephine County went away.
They pretty much shut down. Yeah.
And so it was kind of, that's where the idea was. But last year they collected signatures.
Food bank did. Yeah.
The food bank collected signatures of employees that wanted to take part and donate.
Right.
And it was enough to justify the expense kind of thing.
Back in the day, we established about 25 people. We need at least 25 people. It was an arbitrary number, but it provided a minimum number of people so that it merited the effort and expense of cutting a check each month to go to whatever that worthy cause was. So I would that was back in the day, probably when we had 700 employees. Now that we have 300 or 370 with the passage of the levy. I would still say we need some minimum, maybe not 25, but still 25, 20, 25, something to merit making the effort to cut a check to this charitable organization.
And you have a list of places that are organizations.
Well, right now, I would suggest
something to the NRA.
No,
I
don't want to do NRA or the Josephine Boat Club or Yacht Club or whatever. I'm saying those basically the three that I mentioned that were or used to be Josephine County programs. Food Bank used to be a Josephine County program until 2005. Library, 2007. CASA CAMI. CAMI.
What's CAMI?
Children
Advocacy.
Advocacy
Center. Whatever. Okay, so yeah, CAC and CASA.
Right. Children Advocacy Center and CASA. Yeah, not okay. CAMI. CAMI is a DA program.
I'm like, I don't know that one.
My struggle is going to be philosophically with the library. I could see the merit before, but now, I don't want to preclude
people. Oh, with
them
being a district?
They're a district. It's just a little different.
But there are people outside the district that are...
That's true, and they have a foundation still. But I think if you do that, I think the fairgrounds, parks, Boys and Girls Club, I don't know. Those are the other three that came to mind that may qualify. Parks has a foundation, so does the fair.
Sure, that is true. Although they're still sort of kind of under the
I don't mind actually putting those out there. You can cast a broader net, and if you don't get 25 or whatever your number is, then they don't make it. Okay. I give to the library every day. I mean, every month.
I'm impressed. Okay. Every day?
Well, it's not much every day. You divide it by 30.
They're hanging out every there. Day. So it's one of those guys sitting on the benches out there in front of the library just waiting. Okay.
Well, I had also talked to Jill at the benefits fair last week, and I had thought that a presentation at weekly business session, my recommendation to her was actually to contact Commissioner Hare. But
she did, and I agreed.
I liked the idea of it being a presentation to the public on video, highlighting Food Bank, what they're doing. So a weekly business session would be recorded. It's something the public could see. It's something, so that's why I thought that would be a better opportunity than general discussion or admin.
Okay, good. So if the board is in agreement, then I'll develop some kind of a payroll deduction form that will cast that broad net, and then we'll see what people really want to support, as long as it was a program that used to.
Are you going to give them a list of things, as Chairman was talking about, like the fairgrounds that could be added to that? Or not? Or are you just going to give the three things that you mentioned? Because fairgrounds certainly was a county program.
It still is, though,
but the fair and the parks are still county programs.
They just don't receive general fund dollars anymore.
They don't receive general fund. But we're working on other revenue streams for fair and parks that would be tied to tourism. Pleasure of the board.
Up to you.
Pleasure of the board.
Does the fairgrounds have a Friends of the Fairground?
They do.
Fundraising branch.
And with the parks. So
and the parks has Josephine County Foundation. I do need to declare, though, my mom helps with that board. Her boss is a member of it, and she does secretarial
I can put it on the list and see, and if we get the minimum number,
if we don't get it,
then okay. I will include what's been mentioned, and if you have any other suggestions, again, the qualifier being that it used to be or currently is a county-supported program. Otherwise, we do get into that, what's a worthy cause,
fly fishing trip.
I
would not support that, though I hope you have fun.
Or the yacht club, or things like that. So, I'll do that. The other thing, fairly quick, is that the Food and Friends, the RVCOG, has a CDBG grant through the county to renovate the building for Food and Friends. And so I just wanted to let you know that they are in the process of issuing their first contract to ORW Architecture to remodel that building. So that process is moving forward. I'm sure legal will bring this to the board at the appropriate time, but I wanted to steal their thunder. So that's moving forward. And then finally, my last piece is I just wanted to bring before the board the what I'm calling the transition assistance offer. This is the biweekly payroll. The concern has been that there may be a little bit of a rough patch financially, hardship for some employees with this transition from a monthly payroll to a biweekly payroll. That's possibly true with my research in other entities that have transitioned from monthly to biweekly. Every one of them gave some level of acknowledgement that it could be a hardship or it could cause a financial challenge to some employees, and so they all offered some level of assistance to ease that transition. Very limited, very one time, a limited duration. So what I'm suggesting is that we allow employees to cash out up to 40 hours of their comp time, accrued leave, bank, either comp or their vacation PTO. It's a liability of the county already. The employee would either cash it out or you know, use it upon termination or otherwise. And it offers an olive branch to the union who's contacted me, the AFSCME union, and to those employees who do have some concern that they're not going to be able to function. So that's my suggestion.
Arthur and I discussed this, and I thought he needed to bring it to the board. From my perspective, it doesn't cost the county any money. There's an administrative element to it. But if we can kind of bring people into the fold a little bit more.
If they have an objection, they just check that box. You're giving them a way out. I see
yeah.
the problem.
Yeah. In effect, yeah.
Great.
That makes sense to me. It's money owed to them anyway at some point in time.
Right. And it can only go up as they.
Mm-hmm. And every employee in the county, other than us three, will. Oh, no, and the other electeds will benefit. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, those electeds, yeah. Sorry, whatever.
That's called selfless.
That's right.
So that's what I...
Selfless consideration.
You're just the, you know, paragon of altruism. That's
anything
so
else?
That is all I have. Yeah. Any other questions?
There's a fair report, I think, that I'm anticipating at some point. I kind of want to know how we are doing. That the fair is a real challenge because of the revenue streams that it comes in. I also want to be looking at the renewing the contract for horse racing. I think they're doing well, and I don't know how much the fair is benefiting from that. And I think it's a great idea to have a diverse portfolio of revenue streams and different programs, but figuring that out. And the other thing is that, to bring you up to speed, we had a city-county conversation with the president of the council and the manager yesterday. And Commissioner Morgan, we put together an agenda of items. I met with Aaron yesterday just briefly. Their list is pretty long for the hour or so that we have, so I work with him on trying to say, well, these are things we can work and have a report. I think you need a workshop with the city on the UGB because there's only one member of that board, Rick Riker, of that council, who was actually there during the UGB. I don't want to go through a 10-minute tutorial on what the UGB was. I want to talk about what are the next steps and stuff. So we're working on that.
I know who would present that, and it won't be 10 minutes.
No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in that.
I don't think I'll be sitting through that either.
I won't either. Mm-hmm.
No,
they can act that out.
Anyway, we're gonna work on that. But the fair report was the big one.
Did
there may be things on the city county thing that I think you and I are going to need to touch base on to prepare for.
Okay.
And
but
know,
fair
is
your liaison to fair,
yeah.
I believe.
Yes.
So is do I need to talk with her, or have you
Peggy.
Already talked to her, Peggy? Yes.
Yeah,
her
and I just had a couple of brief conversations and put together their final on what the fair came out like.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the challenge is
getting the numbers
says.
In. And
yeah, and what pertains to the fair, and how much did we get from concessions and the carnival
and. Yeah, exactly. I want to itemize, and then also I wondered. to, I want her opinion on whether she thought the free fare day was a good idea or a bad idea.
Right.
I know from the concessioner's standpoint, that was the biggest day of all.
Mm-hmm.
But, and if that was a regular...
Get sponsors to support every admission day.
Yeah.
You know, that's not bad. If we could do that, that'd be... But we need, for every dollar of gate receipts, we need $4 of concessions to equal that.
To pan
so
out.
We're...
And I don't know if... That's the number I'm looking for, I think.
The other thought that I had was Jackson County's fare goes till Sunday. I can't believe... I suggested we go to a four-day fair, and now I'm suggesting we go maybe to a five-day fair or a four-day fair, but you, how do you not take advantage of a Sunday weekend where people are just dinking around? You know, they get out of church, and wouldn't it be great if the next thing they did is they just went to the fair? It's a holiday. It's a weekend.
I would like to say one of the things that I've heard just on the street is our entertainment dropped off. So we need to think about what do we want to do for entertainment.
I saw the Beach Boys when I was a kid there. I remember seeing 38 Special when I was a kid there. I remember seeing big...
I was an old man, I watched the Beach Boys, and it was fantastic. The second biggest.
Well, there's been a very specific strategy on why we haven't. They don't pay for themselves, and you have to get sponsorship in order to cover that cost. You end up losing money. And so that's where the fair used to do that. And when I came on board, they were $300,000 in the hole. So I'm all in favor of whatever kind of entertainment we can get.
Right. But I brought up
the numbers that Douglas County draws, and with that, they bring people in that stay in hotels, they stay and spend money.
Sure.
It may be that you have a sponsor that brings that person in and has to cover the thing. Yes, promotion is expensive. However, you then have more people that come into your fair that now want concessions and other things like that. So it would have to be a contract to be worked out.
The new people that are taking over Avista Utilities are really into, they want to have their name out there in a big way the first few years. So I told Peggy to contact Steve Vincent from Avista and see if she could get something. Now would be the time for them to get into their budget and say, here's your kickoff for Fairtime 2018.
I'll tell you my bottom line on that one too is that, you know, the fair has always said, well, we bring every dollar at the fair is $7 in the community. My response is, show me the money. Where's the support from the hotels and motels around town? Where are the donations from? Where's the donations from the feed and seed, the Grange, and all the people who benefit from the horse racing coming in? Where's the donations from the restaurants and those people that go out to eat?
To support the fair. The fair
exactly.
Is that big of a push.
Exactly.
That's
let's see it. Let's see it.
None of it lands out here in the front.
I don't know that that's something that the fair board focuses on, and that might be a further conversation that we have with them.
They need to push. They need to push the fair to those that benefit from the fair.
Yeah.
I was there Wednesday and Thursday this year, and the numbers were not what I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fairly good in comparison to recent history, but it's not so good in comparison to historical.
The rides at the carnival weren't what people expected, so maybe they need to change purveyors on that.
Yeah. And the Sunday, we had Sundays, but then we cut back to 4 days a number of years ago.
We
and
had
dropped
Tuesdays
the Sunday.
Before.
Yeah. Didn't we have Sunday, too?
No, we've never had
Have we
Sunday.
Never had a Sunday?
Would it make any sense to go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday instead of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday?
Yeah.
That's a conversation
yes,
I'd like
I
the fair
so.
Board to have and make
we'll
a recommendation.
We'll have the fair board.
I just thought I'd bring that up because a number of other fairs in the state do it on Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know, the challenge that I hear a lot is people can't make it on a Tuesday or Wednesday because they're working on Thursday or Friday. But if they're on a day off, you know, they could at least go down there for a couple of hours or whatever on Sunday. No, we've never had it on Sunday. I've gone to every fair in the last 30 years except for two. And when I was in high school, the auction happens on Saturday, and there's just fair people there working on cleaning up and doing stuff Sunday. So, anything else? I think we're good.
Thank
you, Mr. O'Hare. Can you email Wally really quick? Get him on his way. Board business. I have a significant list. So, what do you have anything, Commissioner Dion?
Fire away. I'm writing here.
Okay.
The only thing I had is had contacted Jim Goodwin. Keith had former commissioner had contacted me about wanting to do an event at the juvenile justice. So my first response was to get older director Goodwin and asked him to email the board so that it could be discussed. The concern was it's business operations, it's courtroom, it's other things like that, and blocking off
the tight parking lot anyway.
It is a horrible parking lot during the day, trying to get in and out of there for all the things that they have going on. So that was one of the things I was told would be discussed today.
An email went out already. You asked us and stuff, and we haven't deliberated on this. I did reach out to Mr. Goodwin. I think he did call me back, but I haven't had a chance to connect with him.
I actually had a phone conversation with him, and he has great concern about it. That it's blocking the entrance or anything else?
The answer is no. It's not that we're opposed to this. It's a great project, but you cannot host something on county property
during business hours.
And there's a parking lot across the street. Yeah. That's where you need to have it.
My concern is that there's a group that has now publicly said they're doing it there without having permission from the county.
Yeah.
It is a public street or a public access, but it's
you the parking
can't.
Lot is not. We have authority to. You park wrong or what have you. So I don't know who follows up with. I'm happy to do it as liaison to facilities. You need to check in. And as a former commissioner, one should think that he'd know the protocol on that. It just is. Can you imagine if somebody can't find parking for a court date or whatever and they're late? That hearing gets, sorry, it's 10:02 and you're not here. Kicking it out. Wait a second, I had to park 4 miles away, So, do you want to do it as liaison to juvenile? That's great. If we're done with that issue, are you satisfied, Commissioner DeYoung?
Yeah, I read through it.
Pretty.
In my email.
Simple decision on that. I've asked Wally, Councillor Hicks, to be here on an issue that has been before the board, I believe, but it certainly came to my attention. We may need to get everybody a copy of the letter that the board received. It was sent to the entire board from a member of the Planning Commission on Monday's hearing, that subject. Wally and I have chatted a little bit about this, and the discretion of the board isn't great as far as our ability to instruct a Planning Commission member to recuse themselves. Do you want to kind of spell out where we're at? Are you familiar with the letter?
I intentionally did not read it because I didn't want to have ex parte contact or whatever. I didn't know what the rules were on that.
Yeah, that's
I know that we received it. I also had great concern that person acting individually under her name as part of that also was...
As a Planning Commission member.
Was advocating for and taking a stance and rallying, that's a huge concern for me.
Prior to the hearing.
They are supposed to be quasi-judicial, neutral, receive things. So if she's testifying to something and offering, how can she be neutral when she takes part in that event?
Yeah.
She's almost already declared.
She already did. And I don't see
I think, if it depends on which way this cookie crumbles. If she said, well, why didn't you make her step down? You saw what she was going to do. You knew which side of the coin she was on. So I don't know.
And it's really not a matter of whether or not she could have expressed her opinion that she was 100% in favor of it. Well, wait a second. I'm not sure I'm 100%. I vacillate every day on the issue. It goes way back and forth. I can argue both sides very, very effectively.
Yeah.
That's the role of this. It's not a quasi-judicial... It's a legislative element, but I hear what that's their charter. They're both.
Is to be, okay, so, and I did not read the letter, but I attended an event in Illinois Valley where her husband got in my face that other people actually had to say, this isn't the place for that. And they very, as far as made their position known to me kind of thing. So I had not read the letter, but I know the gist of it based on the interaction that I had out in the valley that they...
I was uncomfortable that she's on the Planning Commission. This isn't an advisory board.
No,
that's right.
There's a whole different level there that she should have respected I think.
In my opinion, really misunderstands the role of this, and I can't, what I had to do is I had to bring it to her attention, and I did it as the liaison to the program, not the chair of the board. I said, you know, I've received this, the board has received this, and in my opinion, you need to answer how you can be
impartial,
unbiased, and moving forward. And her reaction, her answer was that she said, she asked the commission, is anybody else from the south portion of the county, from the Illinois Valley? No, nobody else. Anybody else representing agriculture, having an agricultural background? No, nobody said anything. She was looking for a round out, like an advisory committee, and that's not how we pick the Rural Planning Commission, with all due respect. You're there as a person representing all of the county. So I really struggle with this moving forward. The challenge is I think there's only maybe five members of the commission there. If she's removed or recuses herself,
they don't have a quorum.
They do. They're four of seven, but it's real shy. I mean, you find yourself all the much closer to a potentially hung position or.
What have you reached out to the chairman to see what her?
It's not at her. It's not the same as ours. Okay. When we do it, you know, the other board members can elect to have a person recuse themselves. I don't think the Rural Planning Commission works that way. They don't. They have different. Okay.
None and why did only five of seven show up?
I'm not sure. So our options are pretty limited. I don't believe that it's a specific conflict of interest, which is, I'm not sure if she actually has a conflict of interest here that merits her removal. She is a professed grower.
On our land.
Is it on our
farm? They grow at their residence. I've had people complain
to me
that it's
within. Yeah, but I thought their residence was zoned EF.
It's right next to a school in town.
I don't know where she lives, but we can get her
address. Because I had a citizen complain to me that they were allowed to grow near a school, within 1,000 feet of a school.
That's not what's on.
But that's how I found out where they lived, and they were growing on their property. Well, someone complained to me about that.
The nexus of an RR, that's a potential conflict of interest, and I think the board would have authority to have her recuse herself.
Yes, we've done some research on that, and they do, by all indications, voter registration rolls reside within the city limits of Cave Junction.
Which and this would not apply to.
Correct, no, correct, yes. That having been said, there are no grows attached to that property, to the property at which they live, you know, actually reside. There is a separate property that they do apparently have licensure from OHA, seven licensures from OHA to produce marijuana on a separate property. And is Julie here? I didn't see.
No, she was.
Okay. Where we left off was she confirmed most of this information for me last night in a voicemail, after a voicemail this morning, and said, if you get a chance, could you just confirm whether that's RR or EF property or otherwise? Yeah. And so I actually don't have the answer to that.
But she'll fall under commercial with this.
Potentially, if she chooses to. But what my challenge is she didn't disclose the real specifics of her potential conflict of interest here, you know.
Well, she's on RR, because that's what the thing's all about, is RR. She's got to go. She can't rule on her own future.
Yeah, that would be
not a potentially likely a direct,
probably a conflict of interest. Yes.
And either way,
not a potential, but an actual.
We as a board,
well, she can elect to not go into the OLCC regulated if she chose to go under 13.
But with seven licensees?
No.
There's seven cards. There's seven OHA cards.
No, OHA card.
Yes.
And six
attached to that.
It's
the alpaca product.
Over 12. Yeah.
Pretty familiar with it, but it doesn't define that you have to do this. You have
true.
You have to elect.
She can,
you know, she could downsize. But even if she was forced to downsize, there's a nexus here where I think it's probably pretty definitive that she's got a conflict of interest. She didn't disclose it at the first hearing. She didn't really provide me, this is outside, a justification why she could be biased. That's the really big one for me.
Who asked her the questions?
I did.
But I mean, who asked her if. Coming up, and you say, do you have a grow in Cave Junction? Can you ask her that?
I think she should have disclosed it. I don't think anybody has to ask.
Oh, that's exactly right. Yeah, conflict of interest have to be disclosed prior to the...
But now that she didn't disclose it, who does ask for that?
My impression is that she did, though. I wasn't there.
She said she was a grower.
Yeah.
She didn't define on RR. She didn't, you know, she really didn't define it very well. I was under the impression she was a grower on EF. Mm. Which, then in that situation, I don't see really the conflict. Any more so than I have a dozen friends, half a dozen friends that are growing on RR in the medical profession. I mean, there's a conflict of interest. I'm not going to be very popular with them if I am making this decision on both sides. So, I don't know.
So, I guess my question would be, as situations come up on advisory boards, advisory board members serve at the pleasure of the board.
Total discretion.
Yes.
Planning commission, how is that different?
It is different in that... Yeah, exactly.
Fair board is different than every other.
Yeah, statutorily with the fair board, you have to go through a process of a 10-day notification and a hearing to remove somebody from the fair board.
There'd be a hearing on here, too.
So the planning commission, if you have somebody that's out, what is the course? Does the board write a letter to the state ethics and say this is an issue?
That's an option, but I think how it's provided here, while it'll go.
Yes. So this is a land use decision-making body. As authorized by statute and not an advisory board. This actually is an email from Michael Snyder going back to 2010, but I do agree with his conclusions. It's because they have authority to make land use decisions, final land use decisions. Yeah. And so it's vastly different from an advisory board in that respect.
This is a legislative issue. It is going to come before the board. I don't think it's of critical nature from an appeal basis. There isn't anything that one would be able to appeal, in my opinion, of a conflict of interest. What are they going to appeal? They're going to appeal it to the board. It's coming to the board anyway. It's at our level where you could appeal this to the voters. This doesn't go to LUBA. Well, it's a land use.
Yes, this could go to LUBA. LUBA's jurisdiction.
Yeah. So I think it's really important that we disclose everything of a potential of conflict of interest at our level. It's probably a very good learning opportunity for the Rural Planning Commission, especially Ms. Gardner and us. But I don't know that I did what I did. I raised it as an issue. In my opinion, she should recuse herself, but that's up to me. That's not up to me. That's what I'm
trying
to say.
Right.
And then they come back with a recommendation, which comes to us, and then we don't have to act on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to agree with that at all.
That's accurate.
That might be the loose cannon. Somebody comes back and says, well, look, she found in this way, and you agreed with that board. You say, no, we agreed with the board. You know, the board didn't agree with them. We had the same
hearing
result. Well, the end result was the same, but we could have gone the other way. We don't have to listen to what they say.
Right.
We go entirely against what the Planning Commission says.
That's right. Now, you are...
That might be the gray area. Or not a gray area, but just a gap.
Yes, you have a planning commission because governing bodies, counties, all counties are statutorily obligated to involve citizens in land use decisions in a formal process, and that's what's going on here. And so you're compliant with the statutes on that level.
Goal one.
Okay,
goal
I think I'm comfortable with it.
Yeah, I just...
She decides to step down, that's her business. But for us to go in and say, well, she's this, this, and this, and you have to step down, I don't think there is a nexus.
We can do that if there's a specific conflict of interest, but I don't know that we know that.
I think we should verify if the growth site is on rural residential. And if it is, it would be appropriate for maybe legal to contact and say, this is a conflict of interest that you need to declare as a current
potential
grower on
conflict
our
of interest.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a potential conflict of
it's
interest.
It's a pretty significant potential conflict
yeah.
of interest. The next
it is. That would be
degree of separation.
And if she declared it, if she just went ahead and declared it, then...
Well, then yes. That's
but
she
I,
didn't
you know,
declare
I
the specificity
there,
of being a grower on RR. She said she's a grower. She's involved in the cannabis industry. And that, to me, wasn't clear enough in everybody's minds.
Okay.
I think we're going to get past it. I concur with Commissioner Morgan's recommendation to legal if you find that there's a nexus there that requires...
Okay. I will do that, and so
they're convening tonight at 6 o'clock for deliberations and decision. That's how it's moving forward. So,
whatever
timing is potentially of the essence, but at the same time, what they say may or may not, you know,
may not
at the end of the day.
The reasons are really important.
I will be right back.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, certainly.
I'm going to, under board business, while you're here, I have not had an opportunity to review the findings of fact. I think Commissioner Morgan's not going to weigh in on it anyway. I'm going to do that today before we set it, move it for the weekly business session. We'll confer with you if you're okay with that to make sure that everything in what the proposed findings of fact is was actually said during the hearing.
Sure.
I'm going to do that today.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
I'll get you that. And so you're okay with putting that on
sure.
the admin if I can get it moving. Thank you. Well,
okay.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I just wanted to bring it to the board's attention. I know it's not directly within my liaison, however, it's a land use kind of a thing, a facilities thing. The Love Abounds Dutch Bros 180 days expires on September 18th. I talked to Mike about it this morning, Mike Watson, and just wanted to reach out to Dutch Bros Love Abounds and say, you've got 2 weeks, how's it going? What are you thinking? Anything
you
we can do?
Do you need an extension?
They don't get one per the contract. They've had their 60 day extension.
Okay.
We can technically do anything we want. I don't want them to say, well, $50,000 was actually a lot, or we'd like to pay you more, whatever it is. I think everything for me is still on the table. A lot of work's been done on this, and I don't want it to just be one of those things where we let go away because we a date, whatever. But we can't have it go in perpetuity. There's been events that have wanted to use the infield that I think Peggy has turned down. And so there is a loss of revenue, however, that we did get a $10,000 upfront right to sign a lease.
Well, they've also done a lot to the infield.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we couldn't have done.
You
drive by and it looks like something now instead of a place where we hide all of our concrete barriers and piles of excess dirt.
That's true. Diane Hoover has the director of the Blue Zones project, and Josephine County is interested in renting the Ambassador. There's a question of charge for that use. The board makes the decision whether or not they can apply to have those fees waived. So there's no conflict in time. All that stuff's worked out. It's just you need to make a recommendation. You need to tell me what you want to do. And
my recommendation is that they pay the fee that every other community member would pay.
So nonprofits have a history of getting some sort of a reduced or waived fee.
Is she doing that as representing a nonprofit, or is
she's doing it as part of the Blue Zones Director project?
And that's nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say we.
They do have funding.
It's one of those things that I want to be very intentional that it does not get any special treatment, that it's be treated like anybody else in the community that would come and needs to use the building in the same capacity as the same response would be my concern.
So if they're a nonprofit, how would we treat any other nonprofit?
They are a nonprofit. It's a different organization.
It's like a state charter something. I'm not really sure.
I don't know that it necessarily is a nonprofit.
Well, I think I'd ask their status. Call Diane and say, what's your status? Are you a nonprofit? No, well, we're not. We're part of.
It's a special 3-year program. They wouldn't get nonprofit status over a 3-year program. It's a grant received program.
I think I'd just call Diane and say, what are you? Because we want to make sure that we're consistent with how we treat everybody else.
Okay.
And if you're not a 501c3 or something like that.
501c3.
She circled half nonprofit, half, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's to remain consistent. I just ask her what she thinks.
There's a partnership with several other nonprofits. However, the organization itself is, she circled nonprofit.
That if she circled nonprofit
and says it's a mix.
What are you? Because we really do need to. We need to remain consistent, and she'll understand that. I would think.
Okay.
Built Environment Summit.
Did they expect to use the building for? Does it say?
One day.
The whole day.
It says 9/28, which is a Thursday. And it says from 7:30 to noon.
So 4.5 hours, 5 hours, time to set up and tear down. And what would that be mean money-wise? What do we charge for that building?
Normally it's $150 per hour with a two-hour minimum. So in this case...
$4 would be $600.
Mm-hmm.
And do we discount? What do we do if it's a nonprofit? Do we go half of that?
What we do with nonprofits with rent per state law is they get a reduced portion, not a complete waiver.
What if we suggest because she's a little bit of both, maybe we split the difference and say
half price? If it's consistent with what we do with other groups.
That's
what
I want. I just want to be consistent so it can't be.
There hasn't been a real consistent application. Right. It just really depends. We waive the fee for Congressman Walden when he comes here because he isn't going to do a two-hour minimum. Sometimes it's like an hour. But I really feel like it benefits. And we do it for DeFazio, everybody else. We don't pick, who or the party-wise.
My bad. The nonprofit says 75 per hour.
That's what I thought.
And the all others is 150 per hour. And she marked them both. So, and she said they're a mix. So they're not a nonprofit officially if they're a mix, because you either are or you aren't. So she'd fall under the 150. So what I would recommend is let's give her the nonprofit pricing at the 75 an hour. Because she's not.
So she actually falls halfway between. You'd add 37.50 to 75 to make it, if you wanted to average it all out. $1.75, and that should be, then we're more than enough. Then we're erring on the side. Yeah.
Okay, we'll get that done. We have a resignation on the Urban Planning Commission, so I just need the board's approval to advertise for that. We had a very short notice on Danny McVeigh, who's experiencing some personal challenges and needs to resign. So we have two members on the Urban Planning Commission that represent the rural interests. Right now it's Danny McVeigh and Gerard Fitzgerald. So let's, if you're okay.
Quite honestly, I don't even know who our Urban Planning Commission members are.
I just told you. Gerard Fitzgerald.
Those are the only two?
Those are the only two. We only get two.
Oh.
Because it's the urban.
Urban, planning. Not rural. Thank
not
you.
Rural.
I just was thinking. Okay.
Yep.
That's
know, right?
My misunderstanding.
You don't even
Sorry.
Know. It's totally pop. Yeah.
So, okay.
As the liaison, I don't really follow the Urban Planning Commission too much. Every once in a while, Gerard comes in and tells me, you need to know about this. Mm. I know about it. We sometimes.
We also last night had a resignation from the Board of Health on a member at large, so I don't know if that's appropriate that we can
advertise.
Do both.
So there's been some email traffic pretty much one way on some all care interactions that are challenging. I just want the full, my opinion is that I believe the full board should be involved in any decisions as a reaction to those kinds of things. So I'm totally endorse you getting the lay of the land.
I'm having a meeting at 11 o'clock with JJ and Wally, Cheryl, and there's a couple things as far as we're basically come up with some recommendations to bring back to the board.
That's what I'm saying, is that
good idea.
I don't endorse moving forward unilaterally without the full board endorsing the action.
Yeah, what we're looking at is what are our options, what are we
That's perfect.
Looking
I would like
to.
That you guys talk about it first, work out all the details, make a recommendation.
Sounds like get the right people in the room.
Perfect. I'm working... I don't need to do that one. The CAC, William CAC, met last night, and they have results. They're tentative. They're confusing because there's other stuff that's being put on Facebook that's not consistent with the email that I received. But as far as I know, they didn't meet the threshold of the two-thirds that they were anticipating to move anything forward.
They sent that email to us saying we didn't meet the threshold of 66%. However, we got 63%, so we still think the board should move forward with it. So they said, we are dropping it, but you shouldn't, was essentially the gist of that email.
I think we should schedule a time to meet with Julie, just Julie, review the email, and make a direction, a definitive decision.
Find out the actual numbers.
And then respond to them through Julie. So there's the Cannabis Advisory Committee that was approved by the board yesterday. Commissioner Morgan, through the staff, had raised some concerns about the duration of time that the appointments were made. I think, if I remember correctly, totally could be wrong, was that I didn't know that this committee was being set up in perpetuity, like a parks advisory or forestry or some of the other ones. I kind of liked the idea of having a finite amount of time. We can do whatever you guys can do whatever you want in 2 years to say, you can all reapply for the Cannabis Advisory Committee. Some may get reappointed, some may not. Some may get appointed for a year, some may get appointed for two. Or we're going to, at 2 years, we've solved all the cannabis issues and we're rolling it into the economic development as a subcommittee for them or whatever. I just kind of feel like I like the idea, like the 91 Implementation Task Force. They had a finite amount of time to lean into the issue, meet as often as you need, make a recommendation to the board, and get something moving.
The difference is we didn't create a task force. A task force would have been a finite time. A committee is not necessarily.
It's at our discretion.
In the early versions that we were putting out there, I actually had put language in of offsetting this staggering. So it, even though it's 2 years, half would be at year one, half would be at 2 years. And so you'd have not everybody. And somehow in one of the drafts that got dropped. So in my mind, it always was going to be staggering like every other committee that we have. I did not see this as a short-term 2 year and be done. Otherwise, we would have created a task force. And it's not a one-topic thing where it's a task force about planning. It's also economic development. It's also tourism. It's also all those other components of, we said in the language of it, it's anything where marijuana has an impact for our community. So I did not see it as a 2 years and done committee, but we didn't write it as a 2 years and done committee. Otherwise, why would we allow them to have 2 year terms, ongoing terms, that kind of thing?
It just says appointed to a 2 year term in the order.
My opinion was I don't mind it being, first off, at the end of 1 year, you're just kind of getting up to speed on this thing, and then all of a sudden, your term's over. Half of the group, your term's over. That almost falls into and I don't mind the 2 year thing. I thought that in the end, the state, they got a lot of work done, knowing that they were done on a certain date, and they really didn't. It wasn't stuff they just kept putting off. They actually went to work and got a lot of stuff done in the last 2 or 3 months. And I had, this group here, if we get to 2 years and we decide that there's some merit and some unanswered questions, can we extend it?
It's not done in 2 years. We did not write it to be done in 2 years. What we do in 2 years is say we're stopping it. As it is right now,
you're not stopping it. The committee is created. The terms of the current members of the committee expire in 2 years from now. You got plenty of time to figure out what you want to do.
And if they decide, we all want to get back on, then that's at the discretion of the board to say, you're all on, you're doing a great job.
So,
or if you have some other people that decide to come in, then you can take some of these folks off and wire in new ones.
So we've got a couple other things. I just wanted to bring that to the board's attention because you had raised that issue of the 2 years. So we approved the order as it was drafted. We approved the list as the order says. So this is a draft press release. I thought it went out yesterday. It should have, but it needs to go out today. If it didn't go out yesterday, if there's anything you wanted to add to the description, I think that we were going to put a copy of the order that created the advisory committee with it. pretty broad in explaining things. I think they should reference the order.
Did you want to see it?
Okay.
I wanted to know when the first meeting was.
So that was another topic. The 28th for me is not
26th.
It's too far out. I would like it much, much sooner, and I think that the Murray Hill Conference Room, based on the turnout to the Rural Planning Commission, there were anywhere between 200 and 400 people that showed up. The capacity at the Murray Hill is just shy of 200. I can't endorse it being in any place less than that has a capacity for 300 or 400 people. You might only have 12 people who show up, but it is bad form, in my opinion, to have facilities at our discretion, and we choose not to to use them.
So what is the ability of the board to have a meeting at the fairgrounds, and how much does it cost us to have that meeting there?
Zero.
Okay.
It's just a matter of scheduling. So I think we should schedule something.
So potentially we could schedule a first meeting and have it be as the format that we had talked about, where the three commissioners are there and discuss what our
vision.
A vision is for the committee. And then the 26th will be Rob Bovet presenting on the state stuff. That is when he's available to come down. He's not available to come sooner other than the 8th, which was less than 2 weeks' notice, and that was too soon. Maybe. And also other people weren't available, staff members that were going to be there.
You're saying split it up. You're saying have one meeting where the board conveys their intent, and then their next.
We welcome them. Here's our intent.
Here's our intent. Here's the discussion, and then
introduce yourselves to each other.
Kickoff would be when Rob Bovet comes down and says.
I like that idea. I was going to suggest that Rob could have participated via Skype. He doesn't actually have to come down. I don't really see this as too much of a back and forth, although Skype totally.
He actually really wants to come down.
I know, but I really want it done yesterday.
Well, I don't think it's appropriate use of his time to have us give our visioning at the same meeting that he's at. So breaking it down in two would be more efficient.
That's a lot to digest in one meeting. And I think that what the value in Rob Bovet actually being in person is the Q&A afterwards.
Yeah.
I really see the fact that somebody can walk up and say, you know, I had this issue.
The personal connection affords the committee members an opportunity to, you know, to engage with him if they have questions.
Right.
Okay, so that's great. Let's just work on. I wanted to get the location, which is really, really important. The 26th, still keep that date. Rob can do that one, but maybe work on a meeting.
A sooner one.
Maybe a little bit. You can work that out.
I'll probably just aim for Tuesday the 12th, since it's 2 weeks before. It keeps it on a consistent date, so long as I don't know what my schedule is.
That's great.
But that would be a matter of if we're all available. My evening is free on the 12th.
I'll let you work that out with the staff.
But I agree that I felt that the 26th was too far out there, but I still think that's the right time for Rob. So
perfect.
Then we can have an introductory.
I like your suggestion.
Works the other thing is we have not established bylaws for the group. That is something that at some point we can do.
We need to do.
True. So it would maybe be something that we can... I'll see if I can work with legal to get a recommended bylaws to you guys before the first meeting.
Yeah. Well, we need to approve them before the first meeting so we can hand them to the meeting and
say,
these are your bylaws. I wouldn't mind looking over the agenda. They need to elect a chair and a vice chair. And
I had forwarded a recommended first agenda. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm. But I'll take a look at it before.
Okay.
We get there.
I will resend it if we need to. Sean Martinez had just made a recommendation.
Yeah, I think he went over it. It sounded good. But there's a court security meeting this afternoon that Commissioner DeYoung's going to attend. I just had a couple of things. I'm suggesting, from a facility standpoint, a walkthrough with a couple of the members of the committee, not as part of the meeting. But I have recommendations as far as infrastructure things I think we can put in the queue, obviously board approved, to do things that I've like, well, why hasn't, you know. And the other thing is maybe next time after this meeting, if you wouldn't mind providing a really short review of what it is that you guys are working on, what you have done, maybe what you are working on. And the other thing that I wanted to make sure that we express is that there's a disconnect, and I don't know if it's an internal thing from our county standpoint, but between what courts is doing, what the city's staff were doing through public safety and such, but that has to be tied up a little bit better before the next drill.
Do you attend all of those?
What's that?
Court security?
He's the liaison to
court. I thought the chair was attending those meetings. Okay.
No, I've never been to one. I was just concerned with the way, and of course, that's the purpose of the drill, is to let you know where your shortfalls are. And we had a ton of them, you know, just in our office. You know, what would you do? Okay, girls, where are you going to go? And we had a plan. Within 5 minutes, we had a plan. Where are you going to hide? How are you going to bar the door? How are you going to do it?
Let's not put it on public record, though. So.
No, it's not. But no, between the girls and I, we did, because that's part of the drill.
So and,
but I was really surprised at some of the things that are in this building that haven't been checked out. That has happened a long time.
That should be part of the court security. I think that's a good point. The last thing that I have is there's a Federal Forest Working Group Committee. AOC is a member. Jackson County is not a member of AOC. ONC is not a member of this group. It's chartered under the state. The program is allocated $6 million to help form collaboratives and get resources, get federal management on lands in Oregon. The meeting's on the 5th. I don't think I can attend. It's up in Portland. But Susan Morgan, the new public lands position at AOC, is going to be attending. We had a pretty good conference call yesterday. There's a letter that Jackson County has drafted, Colleen Roberts. I reviewed it. I don't have everything she said is 100% right. She's working on a redraft that has a couple of elements. I would like the board to take a look at this. And I know this is last minute, but their meeting is on the 5th next week. We can certainly send it like next Tuesday, discuss it then. But I would encourage the Board of Commissioners to probably look at signing a letter to this working group talking about that this cannot abrogate our authority to coordinate, that how can you find yourselves as hosting collaboratives when you don't include the Federal Lands Policy Management Act in your 33-page draft, you know, charter, you know, what you're doing. You don't have the ONC Act of Sustained Yield mentioned in your document, like, at all. It's just, how can you be broad and collaborative, taking in everybody's position and stuff, if you don't have the county's positions and stuff like that? So,
when we do the letter, can we just burn around the outside of us?
Yeah, right.
So they know for impact where it came from.
Flying over it yesterday was incredible.
Something was.
Coming in, flew from Seattle to Medford, and yeah.
I sure think that's everything I had.
So I would love to see a copy of what you have.
Yeah, here's a real close draft. There were a couple of things that I had. Colleen is going to include. I was going to talk more in the intro about the negative impacts of lack of federal management and the we don't have a real good track record as successive collaboratives in Josephine County. I've sat in on a couple of 6 years ago, but I don't even know if we have an active one.
So this mentioned Jackson County. Do we have anything about this? Is their letter?
That's their letter.
Okay.
We just change it to fit our needs. Anything else?
I would support a letter, obviously. Yeah.
I'll get it tailored.
If you'll give me a copy of this, I appreciate it.
No. So we'll have that meeting at 11 and come back to you guys with recommendations.
That's excellent. Thanks for working on that. Okay, if nothing further, the board is adjourned. Are we having a general discussion this afternoon, or did we generally discuss everything?
I think we're pretty close.
Plowed a lot of ground.
Unless you want to come back and get the recommendations of the group this morning, we can make it quick. Because I would actually like to take action if we come up with some recommendations.
Okay.
So maybe we can...
Let's convene.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there any interest to this board? I attended the Rural Planning Commission meeting on Monday night. And it's available. We record it. We're going to record this one. Okay. Is there any interest by the board to attend the Rural Planning Commission? This is the discussion and deliberation based on what was presented on Monday. I'm free to not attend if anybody wants to.
I did not know what the requirements were as far as, is it, again,
we don't have it noticed. You don't get to interact. No, the only interaction I've ever done.
I've just been watching all
the... Okay. The only interaction I've ever done is liaison. I oversee like administrative things. Like Ms. Schmelzer, as the director, started reading testimony that had come into the record. That is not what we've ever done before. I don't encourage that in the future because there's nothing stopping somebody. Everybody got 3 minutes. But I could write a 20-page paper, and if you start reading one person's email, you need to read mine. And if it takes over 3 minutes, then why does anybody come? You just write whatever thing. You don't have to rush. It's all there.
Yeah.
You got to be fair. I don't mind providing to the Rural Planning Commission
every
testimony.
They can provide the letter but not read it into the record.
No, we don't. And so that was something I said, point of order, I think you really need to be fair on all these kinds of things. It's not that we're trying to keep things out, but it's not the same deal. So.
Well, I think that our presence at their meeting, you're going to have a lot of people just say, hey, let me talk to you.
It can be a little distracting.
And I think in out of respect to the Planning Commission, I don't think we need to give them some hurdle to jump.
So I'm not.
They got to convince the commission, not us.
I'm not going to attend tonight.
Okay.
But I will make a point, if they're immediately online, I will watch them this weekend.
Great. Mm-hmm. It's archived. It's on our on our channel. So great. Nothing further. We will reconvene at a general discussion today at 2:00.